Yes, it does. I mean, we're advising anyone who is undocumented to seek legal counsel to see if there's any options for adjusting or changing their status. Some people who are undocumented have no ability to become citizens or be on that path to citizenship, but some might have a claim based on being the victim of abuse before or have some other legal protection that they didn't know about. So we're definitely advising people to seek immigration attorneys and to look at see what their immigration options are. We're also doing a lot of Know Your Rights presentations. So we're trying to go out into the community and advise people on what their legal protections are. For example, if ICE knocks on your door, you have the legal right to ask for a warrant and not permit them to enter without a warrant.
Whether you're documented or undocumented.
Correct.
Okay.
Because your Fourth Amendment protections apply to everyone, right? So we're advising people to go to Know Your Rights presentation to learn about what to do in case ICE shows up at your door or shows up at your workplace. For example, you have a right to an attorney if you're put in removal proceedings. You don't have a right for the U.S. government to pay for your attorney, but you have a right to seek legal counsel and have that attorney with you and represent you.
You do or don't have a right to get it paid.
You do not have a right
Okay.
for a free attorney, but you have a right to pay for your own or bring an attorney to those proceedings.
Well, there are different tiers of undocumentation, correct? I mean, there's just regular, you're undocumented, but there's also DACA, there's different kind of statuses of undocumented.
Yeah, so a lot of people think of immigration as black or white, U.S. citizen or undocumented. And it actually is a huge number of different statuses. And some people are changing status, and some people don't even know what their status is, right? For example, there's students, people on student visas. But if for some reason they had to violate the terms of their visa, then they could fall out of status and become undocumented. Some people are undocumented, but they have a work permit and protection from deportation because they've registered for the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, which is DACA. Some people, a large percentage of the undocumented population, is actually in line waiting for a visa to be available based on a family petition, but the wait times are so long that they're just stuck in limbo waiting. So they don't have any legal protection from that family petition being pending, but they're on the road to documentation.
Well, let's talk about the folks that have DACA. What legal rights do they have moving forward now, or is it becoming muddier?
DACA has been in effect since 2012. There's approximately 750,000 people nationally who have DACA status, and it's very unclear what will happen to those people. Currently, DACA is in effect, and they're accepting renewal applications. But that was a program created by the president, and so therefore it can be changed or modified by the president at any time. And President Trump has made no clear indications on what he's going to do with DACA. So we have DACA clients who are in nursing school or are nurses or are in professional jobs or and have really relied on that DACA status to develop their careers and afford them protection here in the U.S. And now it's up in the air. They don't know what's going to happen next with that.
How are you advising them?
We're not doing initial DACA applications for new clients because we think that in this uncertain time, putting that information to the federal government is probably not advisable until we get a clear guidance from the president. But we are doing renewal applications. If you have DACA and it's going to expire, then we are renewing them. But we're suggesting anyone who has any sort of criminal history or immigration history to talk to an attorney before renewing. And then from that, we'll just have to see what happens federally and if we have any clear guidance on what will happen next with those.
There's one argument. There's an economic argument against mass deportation in that a lot of these people are the people who do the work that nobody else wants to do. Low wage, long hour jobs in hotels and restaurants and roofers and drywall people and agriculture and things like that. Is there a legal way to deal with this on an employer level that would be more humane than dealing with what seems to be coming down now?
I think no one likes the idea of mass violations of the law, right? I think that we are a society of laws and we want people to respect the law. I think one of the problems with mass deportations, especially when we're looking at these procedures that have expedited removals, where the deportations are happening quicker and without as much judicial oversight, is that there's more potential for immigration agents to deny people due process rights and deny people their legal rights in that process, right? If you're trying to deport 500,000 people or 11 million people a year, it is very difficult to make sure that each of those cases has merit, that they don't have any defense to that removal proceeding, that they're not already U.S. citizens or have legal status, and that they have all their legal protections in place. For example, in this memo, he's ramping up the ICE agents and the enforcement mechanisms without ramping up immigration courts or the judicial process, which creates this environment that's rife for infractions of that judicial process. The alternative is fixing our immigration system, right? The fact is that there's 11 million people here because our immigration system isn't responsive to economic needs or humanitarian needs. For example, there's a category for if I'm a U.S. citizen, then I can petition my brother or sister to come to the United States. But if my brother or sister is from Mexico, the current wait time is approximately 100 to 150 years.
Wow, I had no idea.
So there's all these ways where we have created a system of laws, but we have not created a system of laws that works for employers' interests or the country's interests.
You're listening to GLT Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton with Charlotte Alvarez, a staff attorney with the Immigration Project here in Bloomington Normal. Do you have a number, a rough number, for McLean County, Central Illinois? How many undocumented people might be here?
You know, I don't. I know there are some numbers for Illinois in general, but I'm not sure anything that's kind of focused on downstate or the McLean County region.
So in McLean County, people are coming to you. They're scared. They're stressed. What are they asking you?
I think that there's just a lot of fear and uncertainty about if I call the police, are the police going to call immigration on me? Is my license valid to drive my kids to school? If I bring my kids to school, are they going to be safe there? Or is immigration going to come and take my kids while I'm at work?
What are you telling them?
I mean, I'm telling people that they should have an action plan in place. They should be prepared. They should have a power of attorney or guardianship in place so that if you, for some reason, are put in removal proceedings, then you know what's going to happen to your children, right? I think that the more people can turn that fear into actions, into making a safety plan, into making concrete next steps, then the better for them and the more prepared they are. You know, schools have been traditionally safe places. We haven't seen ICE going into schools. Under these memo and these shifts in priorities, it's possible. We'll see what happens nationally, and that advice could change. But as of now, schools should be a safe place to go. The police locally should not be calling in immigration. We have had some conversations with local officials, and the Bloomington Police Department has been very immigrant friendly. They are willing to work with us. For example, they often sign certifications that people are helpful and to give protections to witnesses to crimes. So, and they definitely don't ask about immigration status. And I've never heard them reporting a witness to the ICE or local officials.
And Sheriff Sandage has come out and said this is not something they want to focus on if they don't have to.
Certainly. However, if someone is arrested and sent to the McLean County jail, then their fingerprints are taken and they are occasionally sent to immigration officials. It's just that sometimes the prior priorities, then ICE didn't prioritize every single person who was in the county jail, right? Now, there might be more requests for ICE detainers or ramping up in that connection between the county jail and ICE. But we'll have to see how it goes.
Okay. This is GLT Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton with Charlotte Alvarez, staff attorney with the Immigration Project here in Bloomington. I've heard this anecdotally from a couple of people that related to the travel ban, and we relate it to the undocumented situation that comes down with Trump. Folks that work here that are from India, and they have the H-1B visas, and they haven't seen their family for a couple of years. And they want to go home back to India and see their family and come back, but they're not going to do that now because they're afraid, because of the travel ban, that they're not going to be able to get back in the country and they're going to lose their job. Is there an equivalent, what's going on, say, maybe in Mexico, Central or South America, that people have some legal status that are in the country, but they don't want to go back home because they don't think they'll be able to get back into the country?
Yes, I've heard that from permanent residents from Mexico and Central America who have permission to stay permanently in the U.S., they are documented for the rest of their life unless they renounce it in some way, who are afraid to travel because they're not sure that they'll be allowed to get back in, which is not actually part of any travel ban. It's just the fear and uncertainty that's happening now. There's also a group of people who have temporary protected status. So it's called TPS. Temporary protected status is for individuals from certain countries where the Department of Homeland Security has said that there's some emergency in that country that makes it difficult for those people to go back. So, for example, when the Ebola outbreak happened in Africa, there was TPS for Sierra Leone and other West African countries. There are individuals from South America, Honduras and El Salvador, who have TPS from the early 2000s or even the late 1990s. And this TPS is renewed every year. In order to leave the country when you have TPS, you need special permission to travel and re-enter. And so those individuals have expressed some concern that their permission to leave and enter could be affected. There's a similar permission for people who have DACA. It's much more limited. If someone has DACA and they want to leave the United States and they can prove that they have an employment reason, an education reason, or a humanitarian reason, then they can apply for advanced parole to leave and come back. But we're suggesting no one with DACA apply for or travel on advanced parole because of the uncertainty for that whole program.
What about students who are going to school right now, universities? Maybe Illinois State University, mm-hmm. U of I, Lincoln, they're from Mexico. Do you advise them to go back home?
So students have valid student visas as long as they have their valid student visa and haven't violated it in any reason or any way, then they should have permission to leave and return.
You say should have.
Before this administration, I think that I said things with a lot more certainty.
Okay, and that's what I'm getting
but,
at.
because we have a system of laws that's already been created, right? We say, okay, you've gone through this application, you've gotten this visa, and the process of getting that visa, at the end of the day, the federal government has said, yes, you have certain rights and responsibilities under this type of visa. And as long as you follow those rules, you're fine, right? Whereas the travel ban really put into question a lot of those because people who had student visas from one of those countries then suddenly couldn't re-enter, right, or travel. So now we're suggesting anyone who has any sort of visa when they're traveling, you have to think about those geopolitical concerns. You have to think about the relationship between the United States government and your country and determine the likelihood that President Trump will ban your country from reentry.
So when you advise people, you're not giving them a black and white answer. You're giving them, well, there's a 70% chance or there's a 30% chance, kind of like that, more shades of gray when you're advising them?
Yeah, we're saying this is the law, but President Trump can make an executive order. Even if it's challenged in court, it might take days or weeks for that to be lifted or changed. And if he wins in court, it might not be. So let's look at the country you're from. Let's look at the type of visa you have and the protections you have. And let's look at the timeline of your trip and look at all of those things together individually in your case to determine if you can travel. Even though what a visa does is say that the federal government has already decided all of that. They've already determined, okay, yes, you can come here to go to school and you have the certain amount of restrictions on your travel and your work and your life. Follow those rules, you're fine. But now we're saying, well, President Trump might kind of swoop in and halt or change those rules at any time.
Well, you're a lawyer. You deal in laws in black and white. And it sounds like there's a lot of gray here, but it's also a personal thing. We're humans. Does it affect you?
Definitely. I think that in immigration law, I can help them make a huge difference in their life, or I'm the one telling them that there's no options and there's nothing that they can do. So on the days it works, it's great. On the days it doesn't, it's not so great, right? So I see my job as understanding this crazy bureaucratic system and all of the rules and all the regulations, and then taking the individual person in front of me and saying, how can you get through that process? You know, and help be their guide from the start of that to where they can go. But sometimes you look at the whole system and process and you say, there is no path, right? There's no way to get you from your current status to anywhere else. Or this is the path, but let me explain that you have to leave the country for 10 years and then apply for a waiver that you might not get, and then you maybe will be allowed to come back. I find it really rewarding when it works. And I work in a nonprofit, so we're focused on people where the difference between having no status and being able to work or becoming a citizen is just really important. It's important work, but then there's a lot more uncertainty and unknowns happening. So we'll see kind of where it goes.
It's a fluid situation.
Yeah.
This administration seems to change every week.
Yeah.
Even every day. Charlotte Alvarez with the Immigration Project. She's a staff attorney. Thank you for your time. Thanks for sharing the information. It's nice to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.